You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I think fundamentally what we're seeing is a hostage crisis. You have a lot of violent left-wing mobs, Antifa mobs, saying that if you don't give us power, if you don't give our political wing, the Democratic Party, power, we're going to keep terrorizing your cities. Now, why do I say that their political wing is the Democratic Party? Well, because I find it interesting that Democrats cannot for the life of them condemn Antifa and these violent mobs.
July the 28th, 2020, the words of Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw, pointing out how the Dems will not condemn Antifa and all of these riots. They continue to call them protest, just short of saying peaceful. They've tried that as well, but it's pretty hard when the video hits them smack dab in the face, tear gas being used to disperse crowds that are trying to set fire to various facilities, federal or state or police vehicles. And yeah, the mobs continue. And the mobs will continue until they get what they want. And what they want is power. We're going to spend more on that later in the next couple of hours. But in the meantime, last night was the 61st night since the death of George Floyd. And once again, in Portland, Oregon, more clashes between police and demonstrators. Also in Tempe, Arizona last night. Now, by the way, in Portland, the evening began with speeches. That's okay. That's First Amendment right. But it turns every time into violence, attacking a federal facility. A former NFL player, Mike Tavares, who frequents the rallies in Portland, did tell the audience before the trouble started, burning that building down does not help black people. He's talking about the federal courthouse they continue to attack. But at another rally, an organizer with a group called Stand for Children seemed to encourage the street demonstrations to continue, saying this needs to be the last civil rights movement, pointing out the Montgomery bus boycotts lasted 381 days before the Supreme Court ruled segregation of buses illegal. Now, that's a fact, but what they were doing during those bus boycotts is simply that, boycotting the bus service and everything else. They were not trying to torch buses, set them on fire, attack law enforcement. Attorney General Barr testifying today before the House Judiciary Committee, and in part talking about the rioting and the Democrat cities that allow them. And the Democrats are beginning to realize we can't satisfy the mobs either. They're turning on the Democrat mayors. They've already done it with Wheeler in Oregon, in Portland, I should say. They've done it with the mayor in Oakland. They're going to do it with any mayor that does not get them exactly what they want. Now, Barr, in his testimony, his opening remarks to the House Judiciary Committee today said, the Democrats, regardless of your view of Donald Trump, you should condemn these riots. Last I checked, they still haven't. And if you don't condemn them, you give them passage. By the way, the Atlanta FBI, a document coming out showing that they found explosives, commercial-grade firecrackers, used by Antifa and others, embedded with nails. They were intending not just to start a fire, but cause massive injuries. Well, the battle over hydroxychloroquine continues. White coat summit held yesterday by numerous doctors. Mainstream media saying it's all fake news. How would they know it's fake news? Well, they do that on a continuous basis. But what constitutes fake news? We're going to look at that in more detail and how the whole story was treated by the mainstream media. Twitter limited Donald Trump Jr.'s account for a dozen hours because he tweeted about it. We're going to be joined later in the next couple hours by Dr. Harvey Risch, epidemiologist at Yale University. He said, I know how we can save thousands of lives, but the treatment has been made political, being ignored, and even condemned. And take note of this before we go to our first break. More violence in Chicago. A 10-month-old girl in her car seat on the Chicago Expressway was hit by gunfire. Her mother in the front seat, a 21-year-old man driving the car, reported the mother's boyfriend. Somebody's trying to take out one or both of them, but what they ended up hitting was that 10-month-old child in a car seat, critically wounded. At last report, still alive, but in critical condition. In the past 2 months, just in Chicago, 8 children under the age of 5 have been shot. And they think they don't need any help in Chicago? We've got a lot to cover the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Whether it's sugarcoating the behavior as mostly peaceful or Jerry Nadler saying Antifa's a myth. We remember Eric Swalwell said he's never heard of Antifa. Remember the governor of Washington refused to even acknowledge that Chaz existed at first? There's a pattern here. And here's another thing. You look at words from Nancy Pelosi. What does she say? She says, you know, this is all Trump's fault. If we were in power, none of this left-wing terrorism would be happening right now. So their messaging is coming from different angles, but it is very well coordinated. And it's this. They're going to hold you hostage. They're going to hold you, the American people, hostage until you give them power.
Again, the words of Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw. And that's clearly stated. The Dems are not condemning the mobs and the rioting, continuing to make excuses for them, encourage them, are responsible for them continuing. And then they turn around and attack federal law enforcement officers for doing their job and police for trying to protect themselves and their facilities. So today they had Attorney General Barr in front of the House Judiciary Committee. He continues even now. They're going to regret calling him, because he is going to give them a lot more than they think they're going to get to him. Part of one of the issues he's going to get into, he's going to go after them for the so-called Russian collusion, exposing the whole fake thing. He's going to point out, set to accuse them of attempting to cover up abuses of power in the government's investigation of Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, accusing the administration of, quote, Russian collusion. And obviously, in the end, nothing was found. But the other thing he's doing, dealing with the ongoing controversy regarding the rioting in the street and the allegations of racism among police and the ongoing riots, sometimes involving Black Lives Matter, sometimes Antifa, sometimes both, sometimes who knows who the hell they are. But what he did add in his opening statements He said, in a pluralistic society like ours, composed of many races and ethnicities, we all must strive not to reduce each other to stereotypes or to allow those stereotypes to govern our treatment of our fellow citizens. Rather, we have a basic overriding obligation to treat each other as individuals created equal and entitled to the benefit of the doubt rather than assumptions based on skin color. And he pointed out, when you demonize police, you hurt black Americans, who are the primary victims of crime. He said, when police are attacked, when they are defunded, when they're driven out of urban communities, it is black lives that will suffer the most. And to that extent, he made it very clear. Stuff we've already told you previously. There's no doubt as to where most of the black lives loot are lost and cut down by gunfire. It's inside Black Lives Matter neighborhoods. They are the victims of black violence inside their own neighborhoods repeatedly. There's no denying it. It's a clear fact. More are killed by other blacks with guns than police. But, of course, that doesn't sell well when you're trying to get money and selling an issue. And if you take, as we've said before, if you take police out of these communities, if you end up defunding police where they cannot cover the areas effectively, then those living in those communities are going to suffer even more. And again, these protests have become riots trying to destroy federal property. Why? It has nothing to do with the George Floyd case. The federal courthouse in Portland has nothing to do with anything except that it's a symbol. And as they've torn down and tried to tear down numerous statues around the nation, why not go after what represents federal government, such as a courthouse? That's what they've been doing in Oregon now for 60 days, and it continues. He points out, A.G. Barr, he said, in the wake of George Floyd's death, violent rioters and anarchists have hijacked legitimate protest to wreak senseless havoc and destruction on innocent victims. The current situation in Portland, a telling example. Every night for the past 2 months, a mob of hundreds of rioters has laid siege to the federal courthouse and other nearby federal property. The rioters arrive equipped for a fight, armed with powerful slingshots, tasers, sledgehammers, saws, knives, rifles, and explosive devices. Inside the courthouse, a relatively small number of federal law enforcement personnel charged with a defensive mission to protect the courthouse from being overrun and destroyed. He says, what unfolds nightly around that courthouse cannot be called a protest by any objected measure. It's an assault. It's assault on the government of the U.S. And here's where I really, he made a point that they just basically tried to gloss over. We'll break down more of this tomorrow because, as I say, it's underway now and I can't do this program, monitor it for you at the same time. But one of the things he pointed out, and I mentioned in the opening monologue, from his prepared statements, as elected officials of the federal government, every member of this committee, and of course this is a House Democrat-led committee led by Chairman Nadler, which, by the way, the whole event got delayed for a while because Nadler was in a car wreck before the hearing began. He's okay. Just had to delay getting there and getting the meeting underway. But it's chaired by Democrats. They're the ones who called it. They were looking to use this as another way to get to Donald Trump by bringing A.G. Barr in front of them and mocking him, tearing him down, attacking him. It's not going to go the way they think. It's not. But anyway, Barr in his prepared remarks says, as elected officials of the federal government, every member of this committee, regardless of your political views or your feelings about the Trump administration, should condemn violence against federal officers and destruction of federal property. That's a given. That's a given. If you're an American legislator, if you're a member of Congress, and you sit there on your hands and keep your mouth shut because you don't want to say anything that might look like you're supporting, controlling the mob and getting rid of them because they might turn on you, and you give a pass to these rioters, and they are rioters. There's no other excuse for them. He points out that every member of the federal government should do it, and he said so should state and local leaders who have a responsibility to keep their communities safe. To tacitly condone construction and anarchy is to abandon the basic rule of law principles that should unite us even in a politically divisive time. He said, at the very least, now, God, I have to ask you over and over again, now, listen to me out there, does this not ring true? Does this not say members of that committee should have applauded it? I'm talking about Democrat members should have applauded this next remark. He says, at the very least, we should all be able to agree that there's no place in this country for armed mobs that seek to establish autonomous zones beyond government control, or tear down statues and monuments law-abiding communities chose to erect or destroy property and livelihoods of innocent business owners. No. No, you just basically have the Democrats sitting there and like, Okay, well, we want to ask you about this. Nadler, a key figure, of course, in Trump's impeachment, Nadler, who's dealing with all of this and setting it up, you know, over the weekend, Sunday, he denied there was violence associated with these riots in Portland. He called the riots, quote, a myth. A myth? You'd have to be absolutely, I don't even think you could be blind and not know what's going on. When you hear these stories breaking, you have to understand that, yes, these are riots. These are not simple protest. And one of the things Barr tried to point out, and I wanted to spend some time on it as I read it to you, that we're in this nation, I mean, you can talk about systemic racism. We did have it in this country, and we still have racism. We have pockets of racism. We have areas that might actually be controlled by racists, even inside a police department, inside a community, inside a neighborhood, inside some organization, a labor union, whatever. But the majority of the public has turned its back on that. And we call it out. And that was one of the things Barr was stating in the very beginning, saying we're a pluralistic society composed of many races and ethnicities. We must strive not to reduce each other's stereotypes. Well, with that in mind, let me read you a piece written in a Washington Post column by a college professor who tried, or at least efforted, to tie American law enforcement to white supremacy, claiming, quote, the system of policing in America is historically and structurally racist. Indiana University Associate Professor of History and Gender Studies, Amrita Chakrabartia Myers. I'm not trying to mispronounce her name. That's the best I can come up with it. If I'm wrong, I apologize. I'm not trying to mock her in the name. She penned a column titled, Violence in Portland Exposes the Real Purpose Embedded in Law Enforcement. American policing was designed to uphold white supremacy, not keep people safe. If that's true, why are there ever any cops of any color in a minority neighborhood when there's a gang shooting and trying to stop it and catch them and run and bust up the drug gang? Why is any of that done? She began her piece by noting all these protests had occurred since the George Floyd case, and she quickly blamed the escalated tensions in Portland on President Trump's decision to send in U.S. agents to, quote, supposedly protect the federal courthouse in that city. That's why they were sent in there. And yet she claims the president deployment of a highly military force with no known training in crowd control has inflamed the situation. First of all, they are trained. They're ICE and other federal agents basic SWAT teams from ICE and so forth. Yes, generally they are not in crowd riot control, but all police departments at some level now, federal, state, city, county, have groups trained to deal with rioting, because that's become common knowledge and the norm in our country. She goes on to say, the history of police in America, when she said it traces its roots back to the institution of the slave patrol in 1704. Congressman Gohmert of Texas, and I don't have time to get to it today. I'll try to do it tomorrow. He did a piece the other day, and I just haven't had time at all. But he stood on the floor and started outlining various pieces of legislation passed by Democrat-controlled Congress over the years, basically enabling and encouraging and defending slavery. Now, if you want to be looking at, quote, systemic racism, you got to start with what the Democrats were doing in Congress, not even just in the South, but laws passed in Congress. I'll try to get to that for you tomorrow. I do want to take a break. When we come back, I want to tell you how the left continues to gear up, and George Soros is throwing all kinds of money. You think he can buy this election? He thinks he can. You don't want to miss that story. It's coming up right after this break.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
I've got a story here in front of me that comes from the National Catholic Reporter. And in that story, it says AOC is the future of the Catholic Church. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The National Catholic Reporter is progressive and notes her frequent references to Catholic values and her passion for justice. Well, now, within Catholic values, AOC is for abortions. Has a Catholic faith changed its opinion about abortions? Did anything come down from on high, from some papal decree that I overlooked? In the meantime, we have this November election coming up on us. The Federal Election Commission filings, according to a report for the Washington Free Beacon, shows that the left-wing and partisan Democrat billionaire George Soros has already spent, and I say already because there's still time to go, spent more than $52 million in political spending. $52 million. At this point, it's $30 million more than it was in 2016, if I'm reading this right. Maybe I'm off a little bit, but the bottom line is $52 million so far. And that does not include some of his philanthropic spending via his Open Society Foundation's network. George Soros making every effort to buy this election for the Democrats and get them in control and power. Everything from a St. Louis City prosecutor's office to a governorship to a state representative to a congressional seat to a U.S. Senate to the White House. And, of course, the nominee at this time for the White House is Joe Biden for the Democrats. And there are many who are not happy with him, but they're going to have to go along to get along. And that includes all those Sanders supporters, because Sanders is kind of stepping up and deciding he's going to be with Biden. And the Sanders people were hoping and being told he will be our guy once we get him in there. And, of course, who he picks for VP will be important. But not all the Sanders people were buying the story that Biden would do the bidding once he gets in, that he won't be such a Trojan horse that he'll break down and turn on them. I'm looking at some remarks from a former Bernie Sanders campaign co-chair, Nina Turner. Nina Turner, she was a prominent surrogate for Senator Sanders during the 2020 Democrat primary. She is not excited about Joe Biden. Now, here's what she says, and I've got to clean it up for you. She said, supporting Joe Biden is like saying to somebody you have a bowl of S in front of you. Four-letter word. You fill it in. You have a bowl of S in front of you. All you got to do is eat half of it instead of the whole thing. It's still S. Harvard University professor Cornel West is also upset with Biden. He said, we have to be true to ourselves and acknowledge Biden is a mediocre, milquetoast, neoliberal centrist that we've been fighting against in the Democrat establishment. They're worried that this is also all going to play into Trump's hands. When we come back, before we wrap this hour, how CNN's Brian Stetzer might lose his job because he unveiled, apparently, confidential agreement information about a big legal settlement. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the White Doctors Summit yesterday. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
People, keep on lying. Soldier, keep on.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I have seen 350 patients and counting. Put them on hydroxychloroquine. They all got better. This is what I would say to all those studies. They had high doses. They were giving the wrong patients. I would call them fake science.
Words of Dr. Stella Emanuel, who's with the Rehoboth Medical Center in Houston. One of the doctors appearing at the White Coat Summit. Several doctors coming out saying you're not getting the full facts and truth about how we're dealing and battling with COVID-19 and what can work and what is being sidelined because of politics. Now, let me point out to you very quickly. I don't know the qualifications of each and every doctor that appeared at the White Coat Summit. They claim to be doctors, and if you can run some checks on some of them, you can find some. I do know that the mainstream media was quick to attack the black doctor you just heard, Dr. Stella Emanuel, saying she only got her doctor's degree last November. Well, I don't know that necessarily disqualifies what she's saying, but they want to do it. They want to say that, you know, she only became a doctor back in last November. Suggesting that when she talks about using hydroxychloroquine, got to keep that in mind. Now, she's claiming, of course, that it's beneficial, as did many of the other doctors. We're going to get into that part of the story a little bit later, and also how the event is fueling this whole hydroxychloroquine thing and concern again. Because later in the second hour, I've got Dr. Harvey Risch, who is a Yale University health professor of epidemiology. He released a paper last week saying that hydroxychloroquine can save tens of thousands of lives if we will quit politicizing it and use it as it can be used. Yale University, a professor who says this is what he sees with it. So some of these doctors coming forward yesterday did the same thing. As you heard from Dr. Emanuel, she said it can work. And she wrote that the fear, sickness, and deaths were senseless and unnecessary, that they could be used to save lives. Well, the response on the mainstream media is all of this is just, this is just hype and fake news. Fake news. Fake news to the extent that Facebook, Google, YouTube, Twitter all decided to censor the viral video of the doctor's Capitol Hill coronavirus press conference. They said it's a fake press conference. You know, I got to ask you, every news conference I've ever been to, you could say, is a fake news conference, if you want to label it that way. Sometimes someone's there just peddling their idea of something, and you're there to cover it. I've always said in this business, when I was working with young reporters coming in, you're going to be used in this business. There are going to be forces, be it a mayor and his political arm or police chief or someone else, they're going to use you to get their word out, to get their story out. You just have to make sure you're not abused in the process, that you come away with a full factual story. Now, this group of America's frontline doctors, as they're called, was apparently organized and sponsored by Tea Party patriots. So immediately, many on the left and others are saying, see, it's a right-wing effort. It did feature Republican, South Carolina Republican, Congressman Ralph Norman. He, and along with these frontline doctors, as they call themselves, shared their opinions and views on coronavirus, the medical response, and for the most part, the value of hydroxychloroquine, how it can work and be beneficial. That video had something like 17 million views during the 8 hours it was hosted on Facebook. 17 million views. Well, that certainly got the attention of the mainstream media. Not really. I looked at the mainstream media coverage on MSNBC and CNN and NNN, and I didn't even see them covering it. Now, they didn't mention one thing about it. They will do all kinds of stories saying that Trump is wrong and faking about hydroxychloroquine and anything they can to boost any attacks on him, but they wouldn't even give some attention to something like this. I'm not saying they have to endorse it. They didn't even cover it. Again, in their opinion, if we don't cover it, it didn't exist. According to one source, looking at the viral velocity of that event, more than 17 million views, that post was beating content from other prominent accounts on Facebook, such as Hillary Clinton, Kim Kardashian, and even Reverend Franklin Graham. The America's Frontline Doctors is a group funded by Dr. Simon Gold. He is a board-certified physician and attorney. And yes, it was organized and sponsored by Tea Party patriots. So the mainstream media came rushing in, as in Facebook company spokesman Andy Stone said, "We removed this video for sharing false information about cures and treatments for COVID-19. Now, they did not specify what they considered to be false, but they made the decision. And then when part of it got tweeted and picked up by Donald Trump Jr. as he began to post some of their remarks dealing with what the doctors had to say, sharing some of the video, Twitter penalized Donald Trump Jr. and shut down, or actually limited, as in their words, limited some of his account functions for 12 hours simply because he was retweeting some of it. They say you violated our misinformation policies. You know, they've said a while back that Twitter and Facebook, they're going to have their own groups decide what's fact and what's not. And when it's fake, they're going to denounce it or at least put up a warning. No, in this case, they just decided to shut it down. I got to ask you before I move to the next part. I got to ask you, if they say that was fake and they shut down his function, what did they do the other day about actor, comedian, and I use that term loosely, Rosie O'Donnell? You know what she did last week? On Twitter last week, she sent out a message saying, Donald J. Trump is now the leading cause of death in the United States. There's no fact to that. Now, I guess she's trying to tie him to COVID-19, but saying he's a leading cause of death in the U.S.? Did they shut down her account? Did they punish it at all? Did they label it fake? Did they put up a warning that this is fake? No, 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 they don't do that for the leftists. There's that damn hypocrisy again. One of those taking part in the White Coat Summit was in West L.A., I think, at the time. All right, that's where he practices. This is a psychiatrist. And one of the things he did want to point out, that what we're seeing happen right now, aside from a debate over what's the best way to treat it, things of this nature, he said, what we're seeing is the effect upon children. And this doctor, Dr. McDonald said, Dr. Mark McDonald, L.A. child and adolescent psychiatrist, he said, fear is driving parents, which in turn is being put on their children.
The fear is real, but it's not based on reality. When you are in a state of panic, when you are terrorized, when you are traumatized, you cannot think clearly. Most of the adults in my practice with children that come in for treatment are in that state. They are not responsive to information. They are allowing fear to guide their decisions.
In other words, he's saying that this fear is absolutely paralyzing parents. And they're not sure what to do and how to go about it next. But he did say what they are doing in the process. And as a parent, I mean, you understand, you want to do everything you can for your child. You want to be very, very careful. There's no doubt about it. But he says what ends up happening is what the parents are doing with their children. Listen.
They're preventing their children from playing outside. They're preventing their children from going shopping with them. They're preventing their children from participating in sports. They're coddling their children because they think that that's what's best for them. The children are suffering. In my view, this is child abuse. We are training an entire generation of children to live in fear, to live in fear of people. We are training an entire generation of children to live in their parents' basements until they're 40 years old so that they can be safe.
Again, the words of Dr. Mark McDonald, practicing child adolescent psychiatrist in West L.A. When we come back from the break, what is safe? He's going to discuss what is safe. But before we go to the break, let me share words from another primary care pediatrician, Dr. Bracho Sanchez, and saying some kids are scared at this point. They're scared because they watch adults debating. Should we open schools? Should we not open schools? The kids are watching this. You might not think they are, but they are. And they watch and they see and they hear the talk going back and forth, and they get frightened. They don't, and they're, if they're dropped off at school, they're even in more fear at this point. And the question again is, what is safe in today's environment? We'll take a break when we come back. Again, Dr. McDonald.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I said, brother, if you only knew, you'd wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me until you use me up. Until you use me up.
This
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So again, back to the words of Dr. Mark McDonald, L.A. child and adolescent psychiatrist. He says that fear is driving parents right now. The COVID fear is driving them in reference to their children, which on one hand is understandable. But what he's saying is you're translating so much fear, the children are now getting overly anxious and fearful. And now the parents are coddling their children, overprotective to the extent that, well, they just cannot have a life in the future for up until they get maybe age 40, because who knows what's going to happen to them. If you're a parent, believe me, every time your child is not where they should be, when you expect them to be, you immediately get concerned for any number of reasons. I would never denounce that concern. I'm glad parents have it. But yeah, there is a point you have to. I remember when my first child was born, the girl, took her out to the park, put a big blanket down, put her right in the middle of the blanket, and I finally decided to take her out of the park. And the first time out, she gets stung by one of those little honeybees or whatever you call it. I couldn't believe it. I exposed my child to that. After a while, you realize you can't stop everything. So that's the point of Dr. McDonald. In this world, what is safe now? What is safe?
Whenever I hear the word safe, I always ask the following question. Compared to what? Compared to driving? As we heard earlier, driving is far more dangerous. Far, far more dangerous than going to school. Safer than staying at home? Children are getting sick at home. They're getting fat, they're wetting their beds, they're attacking their brothers and sisters with kitchen knives, as two children did last week. I heard from the mother. She went to work. She doesn't have a babysitter. She's a single mother in Santa Monica. She's making minimum wage. She got a call from her neighbor saying the police are on the way. Why? I heard screaming. She rushes home. She finds out that her children have been fighting with knives. And these children are good kids, but they didn't know what to do. They went off Zoom after 5 minutes. They were bored. They got into an argument. One of the kids ate the other kid's watermelon, and pretty soon they're attacking one another with knives. Is she going to lose her children? I don't know. She's a good mother, but what can she do? She has to choose. Stay home, go on unemployment, or go to work.
That's a difficult situation for any parent. That might be one of the more extreme cases, but yeah, if a parent can't be there because they're trying to get out and earn some money at this point, and the kids can't be in school because the schools are closed, situations are beginning to develop inside homes, be it something like that in violence or just getting more and more withdrawn. There's going to be a price to be paid down the road. Speaking of prices to be paid, CNN, of course, had a settlement with the Nicholas Sandman. Remember the Covington Catholic High School student? When he was in D.C. and he was wearing a MAGA hat, and this group of protesters came by, and one was a Native Indian American elder, they say, he got up and started banging his drum in front of him, and Nicholas Sandman just stood there and smiled. He said, I wasn't trying to sneer and mock him. I was just smiling, trying to, you know, make him know I'm not a threat to him. Well, of course, the way it was covered by the mainstream media, this kid is assaulting a Native American elder. They made the Kentucky teenager an aggressor. Well, he sued CNN, Washington Post, and others. Washington Post recently settled a $250 million defamation lawsuit just last week. And CNN had reached an agreement with him back in January. These are supposed to be non-disclosures on the settlement. But here came a tweet from Brian Stelter, who is at CNN as their, quote, journalist, quoting out some facts that basically the litigation defamation cases sometimes amount to nothing more than paid nuisance value settlement, nothing more. In other words, suing for $250 million and likely got $25,000. Well, the attorney representing Sandman says Brian Stelter just can't learn basic lessons over at CNN. And now they're going to go after him and say, you know, he could even end up losing his job. The attorney representing the student says heads are going to roll at CNN. And Nick Sandman is going to file another lawsuit and reveal the truth. In other words, the reason that tweet was put out, to make it clear that CNN didn't give this kid $250 million. I don't know what they gave him, and I don't know if Stetler really knows. But he thought he'd just kind of put it out there. If he ends up losing his job over that, I won't be shedding any tears over it. But others in that organization should have been fired because they allowed the story to go on like it did without ever checking the facts. The kid wasn't the problem. They deserve to be sued. We'll take a break, and in the next hour, we're going to go again talking about the mobs and the violence and how Democrats will not do anything to stop it. But they're already getting fearful. They are recognizing that this mob violence can cost them the election. And also, the professor of epidemiology at Yale will join us and his view of hydroxychloroquine. If you been hearing debate over should I get it? Is it good for me? Would it hurt me? Would it help me? You don't want to miss that interview. It's all coming up. And of course, we'll begin with news and commentary.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.